Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. On this Tuesday, June the 5th of 2018. Our program is presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Blackthorn Golf Club. And the Blackthorn card, it's just $99. And with that card, you can receive up to 80% off rounds of golf, including cart, at Blackthorn, plus great specials at the Blarney Hole. And by Ivy Court Inn and Suites. With convenient and unique meeting spaces, you're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett, alongside Eric Hansen. He is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. We are sitting in the home radio booth behind home plate at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, where tonight the South Bend Cubs will take on the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, the San Diego Padres affiliate, in game one of a three-game series. First pitch at 7:05. The pregame gets underway on WSBT Radio at 6:50, and we have seats available for tonight's game if you would like to enjoy some professional baseball on this Tuesday night. South Bend was idle yesterday. Coming up on the program this evening, in just a couple of moments, we'll be joined by former Irish quarterback Ron Paulus, now football director of player development at Notre Dame, to talk about a charity softball game coming up at Four Winds Field on Monday. We're going to have a South Bend Cubs interview in about 20 minutes. We'll be joined by starting pitcher Eric Ullman. He was a fourth-round pick of the Chicago Cubs last summer out of Cal Poly. So we'll talk to Eric about being drafted. Players are being drafted right now in the 2018 Major League Baseball Draft. Also, we've got a My 5 question of the day. What are the top five things Notre Dame has or does to help kids get to the National Football League? Eric will handle that coming up in just a little bit. Also, next hour, they said it. We have a batch of audio. We're going to talk about some quotes this week from sports figures, rapid fire, and then South Bend Cubs baseball coming up at 6:50 here on WSBT Radio. Eric, how are you today?
Doing great, Darren. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Good to be with you. And I noticed Mike Farrell put up a story about an hour ago at IndyInsider.com. It's follow-up on C.J. Sanders deciding to leave the Irish football program, graduate transfer. He has a brand-new home now.
Yeah, he's going to play with SMU. He's going to be in the American Athletic Conference. They like to throw the ball around at SMU. And we've known about the transfer, or right, the imminent transfer, for a long time. We didn't know about the destination until this week.
Four special teams touchdowns with the Irish, three kickoffs and one punt return. So C.J. Sanders has a new home. He'll play his final year of college at SMU. Along with Eric Hansen, I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio, live from Four Winds Field. We're joined now by Ron Paulus, Notre Dame football director of player development, an Irish quarterback from 94 through 97, setting 20 school records as the signal caller for the Fighting Irish. Ron, it's Darren. Good to talk to you. How are you today?
Doing very good. Thanks, Darren. Good to talk to you guys, and looking forward to visiting with you.
You bet. Thank you so much for your time, and we're here at Four Winds Field. You're going to be at Four Winds Field on Monday as the Irish football team will take part in a charity softball game at 7 o'clock, and they're going to take on area law enforcement officers with proceeds going toward cops. And, Ron, maybe a little background. Why is this an important event for the University of Notre Dame and the football squad?
Well, as we look at the community, we like to do as much as we can in on our campus community and then within the South Bend community. And, you know, as you look around, there's different people whose lives are affected and intertwined with our lives. And, you know, we have security details that certainly travel with our football program. And, you know, our guys have opportunity to mix and mingle with different areas of law enforcement on different occasions. We do some work with different entities downtown, the food bank and the Center for the Homeless. And, you know, we look for an opportunity where we could affect someone else so that the law enforcement became a natural fit and an easy way for us to interact with them and raise some money for Indiana Cops, which benefits the concerns of police survivors. And, you know, how what better way to do it than get out at Four Winds Field.
Ron, this is Eric Hansen. I'm sure that people look at your title and say, okay, Director of Player Development. What is that? Is that a coaching position? Is it something behind the scenes? I think there's so many tentacles to this. How would you summarize when people ask you your involvement with the football program? What do you tell them is the thrust of what you do?
I deal with everything off the field for our players. Okay. We have outstanding coaching staff led by head coach Brian Kelly. They get incredible skill development from those coaches. They get incredible strength and conditioning development from Matt Bayless and our strength staff. Our operations team keeps the whole program moving in the right direction. Our recruiting team keeps an eye on the future. And I pretty much work with the guys in all aspects off the field. I want our guys to relieve stress and enjoy life off the field so that they can enjoy life and have success on the field. So I deal with helping create programming for our players to develop as people, community service events, leadership programs, compliance, housing. I'm our direct liaison to our academic world. Anything that the guys are dealing with off the field, the parents I deal with, welcome weekend when they come to campus. So it's everything off the field. And the idea is that, you know, when you, there aren't many guys, and you can look back through history and at all different programs, there's not many guys that are a mess off the field and have struggles off the field and still have success on the field. So we want to keep their life off the field in order and help them enjoy that and prepare for life beyond the football field and allow them to free up their mind and have good success on the field.
Okay, Ron, we're going to circle back to the softball game here, but I wanted to kind of go along with this theme that you just explained what you're doing. And I believe the softball game is actually part of the 4x40 Excellence Beyond ND program. You know, people know that the veteran players are back on campus and participating in this program and also in, I would guess, Matt Bayless has them pretty busy, too, in the weight room. But the freshmen and regular students don't start summer school into the middle of the month, a couple weeks from now. Can you talk about the genesis for the 4x40 program and kind of what Coach Kelly and what you want to get out of these 2 weeks before summer school starts?
Sure. These 2 weeks before summer school allow us as a program and as student athletes to develop. Great strides and development are being made in the weight room. A large focus of part of the day is on their physical training. On the other part of the day is their training as people. And we've created the 4x40 Excellence Beyond Player Development Program, which brings them back to campus for the first 2 weeks of June. We train in the morning, our physical bodies. We train in the afternoon, our mental and personal development. We do that with different speakers. We'll work with people on campus. We'll work with people off outside of campus, some national speakers that have come to campus over the last couple of years. And again, this year, we'll work with the Career Center. The Center for Career Development on campus will spend 3 days with the guys working on developing their career aspects of their lives. We'll work with gender relations on campus, talking about healthy relationships and living properly in the campus of Notre Dame. we'll do a lot of different things, and we have some service products, which brings us to the opportunity to play the softball game with local law enforcement. But the idea is that it gets them back to campus, it gets them on a training regimen as athletes and as students and as citizens in our community, because as we say in recruiting, and we mean it and believe it, you know, coming to Notre Dame is not just a four-year choice, but a 40-year decision, a 40-year and beyond. Does that degree and that experience carry you? So that's where we come from with the 4 for 40, and that's why we do it, to help develop them fully as people.
And I'm looking at a chart. There's, you know, Ron mentioned some of these. There's investment. They talked to Mike Mayock about NFL development. Mm-hmm. There is faith, community, leadership, performance. This is pretty impressive. I want to go. Do they get school credit for this, Ron?
No, there's no school credit. There's no school credit. The NCAA has created an opportunity for a player development program like this to take place, which allows the guys to be back on campus. So there doesn't need to be school credit, but certainly the benefits for life are important. As you just mentioned, you know, Mike Mayock will be in tomorrow, and he'll talk about the evaluation process. Not what Mike Mayock thinks about one guy, but what it's like to go through the process of transitioning from the college world to the NFL world. I mean, that's a big transition. It's an important transition, and you see guys hit pitfalls all the time. As we say, it's more than touchdowns and tackles, and that's kind of what Mike Mayock will talk about. You know, we had nutrition, talk about creating the proper kind of meals and the proper kind of to get the right kind of performance based on what you're doing. We have social media education and media relations education and other important topics that can affect the rest of your life and the way you navigate these situations. So, yeah, we're excited about what's going on, and we're excited about the people that our guys get to learn from and interact with and have lunch with and spend some time with. We don't just do this one day a week throughout the summer. I mean, this is an important piece that we put a lot of focus on, and that's driven from Coach Kelly and right from the top.
Ron Paulus is our guest, Notre Dame football director of player development, former Irish quarterback, 94 to 97. It's interesting, Ron, just with my time in 10 years being around the Irish hockey team, traveling, how training table strength and conditioning has changed in that amount of time. Just from a football perspective, remembering when you were here and now compared to what the guys have with strength and conditioning training table, how much of an advantage do they have? And do you wish you would have had something like a training table way back when?
Yeah, you know, the guys, you know, what's really, really good, it's way different than it used to be. And that's okay. I mean, it's progressed nicely.
Yeah.
And as the athletes have become more superior than they were back in our day, you know, there's more things to tend to, and they're more conscientious of their physical attributes and what they want to develop. So, you know, to offer more outlets for these guys to enhance their performance and enhance their athletic ability and train, I'm all for it, and I'm glad that the NCAA has created opportunity for that to take place. And you know, we're certainly excited to help them grow as student and as athletes.
Ron, I'm going to circle back to the football and the four softball game. A couple questions from me. One is, how much is admission for people to come? And two, is there going to be opportunities to interact with the players, either, you know, like get pictures or get autographs or things of that nature?
Sure. The idea of football in the force is it's certainly not to display our softball prowess here on the field, but it's to get our football players in the community. One of the great venues in South Bend is certainly is Four Winds Field, and what a great host the South Bend Cubs have been to create the opportunity. But there's going to be, what we're going to do, the setup will be, we'll play four different games. We'll break our team into four different groups. We'll play four three-inning games, so it'll move along pretty quickly. We'll play different law enforcement agencies from the area, including NDSP, the South Bend Police Department, the Mishawaka Police Department, St. Joe County, and the Indiana State Police. And we'll play these four three-inning games. And while there's teams on the field, the rest of our football players will be up in the stands. They'll be interacting with fans. They'll be out in the kid zone. They'll be signing autographs, awesome. And very much accessible. People can get autographs. People can take pictures. We want to be in the community. We want to interact with the fans. And ultimately, it is to raise some money for Indiana Cops. So there is a $5 admission charge for anyone older than 12 years old. 12 and under are free. This is an opportunity to interact and raise a little money. So we look forward to everybody coming out, having a nice night. While the South Bend Cubs aren't at home that night, we'll take over the field, and hopefully we don't embarrass ourselves too bad.
I remember some of the stars from last year. Greer Martini was pretty slick with the glove. Give us a scouting report on some of the the players that you think will be really good. And is Brian Kelly going to do anything beyond bossing people around this time? Is he going to get up there with a bat and take a few swings?
I wouldn't expect Coach Kelly to take a few swings. He'll throw out the first pitch, and then and he'll probably resign to egging on the competition from both sides. But we have guys. It's fun to see, and it's interesting to see. You look out and see these guys that are incredible athletes on the football field, and some it translates. Greer Martini last year certainly was one of them. Brandon Wimbush could probably play baseball at a really highly competitive level. Ian Book made some incredible catches in the outfield. There's guys that are just natural athletes that can certainly do it. And then there's other guys that really look like they have no business being on the softball field. We have a good time with it. They bust each other. They're going to create their lineups and set their teams here in the next couple days. We're looking forward to having a bunch of good guys out there and having fun with the local law enforcement, knowing that we got beat last year in all the games we played. So we'll see if we can score a couple runs.
I bet the law enforcement guys want to get the ringer Cole Kmet on their team.
Yeah, right. We might make Cole he might have to sit out. He might have to watch this. I don't know. But whoever has Cole will have a good chance.
Ron Paulus is our guest. I have a couple of football questions for you, Ron, before we let you go. I would just like your perspective as a former quarterback, what you like about Chip Long's style of offense.
I like our aggressive nature on offense. I like that we play offense offensively. I think he does a really good job of calling an aggressive game. I think he looks to take shots when he can. I think he likes to keep pressure on the defense. And, that's exciting. That's exciting offensive brand of football. And when you have guys that can perform, you get great results like we had last year. And, so I like the way we're aggressive on offense. There's only so many concepts in the world of offensive football. But it's a matter of when you call them and how you implement them into your offense that makes you an effective offense. And I think Chip does a great job with that.
And finally, Ron, just from your time as a coach and also as a quarterback, give Irish fans a little insight because they don't get to see practice. How difficult is it as a quarterback during the middle of the season when you are so focused on the next game to try to work on just tweaking your fundamentals or trying to get better in an area? Is it just almost too difficult? There's not enough time to do that just because of the next game is up so quickly, and also you're so limited working with coaches nowadays?
Well, he is certainly limited working with the coaches, and that's just based on NCAA rules. But, part of the preparation for the next week is to tune yourself up mentally and tune yourself up physically and get yourself ready to go. What I think our quarterbacks can certainly benefit from is the experience of Tommy Reese. As a coach, he's a sharp, as a player, he was a sharp player. He was really aware. He was a technician. And, he can translate that into coaching. They have a great resource with him. So when you're talking about preparing a young man to perform mentally and physically, that's what you do. That's what coaches do during the week. That's what we want to do at all positions. And certainly our guys have a good one in Tommy Reese to get that done.
Okay, Ron, let's go back over from the top. Football in the Force, Monday at Four Winds Field, 7 o'clock, $5. The proceeds go to Indiana Cops, which helps families of police officers, And then there's going to be lots of interaction with fans that they can get autographs and get pictures with players. Did we leave out anything?
No, you got it. Gates will open at 6 p.m., and the team will get there about 6:15 and start their warm-ups. We'll start the game at 7 o'clock, and one of our team will be in the dugout ready to roll, and the rest will be up in the stands welcoming fans. So, you know, we'd love to see more, a great deal of South Bend come on down and join the Notre Dame football team and the local law enforcement at Four Winds Field on Monday night for our games at 7 p.m.
Very good. Hey, Ron, thanks for doing this. Greatly appreciated. Great to catch up with you, and hope you have a great turnout Monday night.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Our pleasure. Ron Paulus, former Irish quarterback, 94 to 97, now Notre Dame football director of player development. Four Winds Field, 7 o'clock Monday. Notre Dame football taking on area law enforcement officers with proceeds going toward Indiana cops. And as Eric mentioned and Ron mentioned, a chance to interact with players and coaches. Great opportunity to support our community, and also an opportunity to get up close and personal with the Fighting Irish football team, because very, very soon they're going to be getting down to business, getting ready for another football season. Should be a great night here at Four Winds Field on Monday. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. It is 27 minutes after the top of the hour. On tomorrow's program, we'll be joined by Pocky Kelly, the wife of Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly. We'll get into the Kelly Cares Foundation. They are celebrating their 10th anniversary. A lot of big events coming up this summer. One was in Bridgman yesterday, of course, which Eric attended. And we have Football 101 coming up next Tuesday.
I need to go to that. I think I need to brush up.
We need to brush up just a little bit.
They won't let men in, I don't think.
This is women only, and Pocky will join us tomorrow to give us all the details on Football 101, and then we'll be broadcasting live from Football 101 next Tuesday, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. We'll step aside. Coming up next, we're going to have Eric Ullman, a South Bend Cubs starting pitcher, that will join us live in the booth. And we also need to mention tickets can be purchased for the softball game on the SouthBendCubs.com website. And you can stop by the Cubs ticket office or call the ticket office 235-9988. And with the game tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday, if you're coming out to the ball game, you can purchase the tickets on the concourse behind home plate.
That's awesome.
So that's some more details on the event coming up on Monday. We'll talk some baseball coming up next. And you are listening to Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Welcome back to Weekday Sports Beat. I'm Eric Hansen. Darren Pritchett will be rejoining us very soon. We will have pitcher Eric Ullman from the South Bend Cubs, a 6'3" right-handed pitcher. He was a fourth-round draft choice from Cal Poly St. Luis Obispo, originally from Nevada, and he'll be joining us shortly. We just got finished talking to Ron Paulus, the director of player development. He was promoting the Football and the Force charity softball game, which will be Monday at Four Winds Field at 7 p.m. Lots of interaction with players and coaches. $5 tickets available at the Cubs, South Bend Cubs ticket office. And you can also call the ticket office if you don't want to come by in person. They're $5 a piece. And we are now joined by Eric Ullman. Did I screw up the last name?
No, that was good.
Okay, Eric Ullman from Cal Poly St. Luis Obispo. St. Louis Obispo.
San Luis Obispo.
San Luis Obispo. I always wondered how to say, I just say Cal Poly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's two, so sometimes you have to differentiate, but
we know that yours is the one that's the famous one.
Yes.
Very good. Well, Eric is a starting pitcher for the South Bend Cubs. His last five starts, two victories, a 1.55 ERA, 29 innings, only 24 hits allowed, four walks with 24 strikeouts. So let's talk about those five particular starts, Eric. What have you done any differently, or what have you done so well that has led to the success recently?
Well, the pitching department came through and kind of showed me some things that I was having success with and the things that I was giving up all those runs with early on. So I kind of just carried those into these past five starts, and they've worked out. I changed the side of the rubber I was on, and that kind of creates a different angle for the hitters, makes it tougher on them. And it made the sinker kind of snake almost. Look like it's going to cut, but ends up sinking down on them.
Eric, I'm curious, when you make the transition from college into the minor leagues, what's the biggest difference in terms of the hitters you face? What's the biggest adjustment as far as just the pitching part of it, not the lifestyle or anything?
The hitters are definitely all professional now. You got to take every at-bat seriously. In college, sometimes the bottom half of the lineup, it's almost like it's an uncompetitive at-bat, but every guy's competitive in the pros, so you got to take that into account.
It's been pretty remarkable what this starting rotation has done the last month, Eric, and I'll give you what I've put in my game notes for a while. The last 30 South Bend starting pitchers, 23 of them have allowed two or fewer runs in their start. And in those 30 starts, the rotation's ERA is 2.77. So that's really getting the job done. I would assume with the success that everybody is having, that's something you guys just kind of feed off of. If a couple of guys are doing well, it's almost just like the flu. Everybody kind of catches that ability to maybe get the job done a little easier.
Yeah, you want to go out there and keep the train rolling with the streak that we've been on, and every time you see another starting pitcher go out there, you want him to do the same. So we've got each other's backs in that aspect.
And let me ask a follow-up question. Just with, in the past, I've talked to catchers, and they say they've never really been able to call pitches until they get to professional baseball. Now, you've worked with mainly Miguel Amaya and Michael Cruz this year. Before the game, do you have a say in the game plan? Is it Brian Lawrence that has a say? How does that part of the game work?
So, obviously, you're going to pitch to win, but at the same time, you kind of have to pitch with the pitching department's long-term plan with you. So, normally I'm like a sinker guy, but another thing that with the success lately, they showed me how my four-seam plays to lefties better than the sinker does.
Hmm.
So started to incorporate that lately, and it's kind of making the contact is weaker with the four-seam, which they have all this data for. So they showed that and kept going with that.
The analytics is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely helpful, apparently.
Did you have anything in college like that?
No.
Yeah, totally different ballgame at the professional level. And I know teams like North Carolina, they're going to these analytics heavily in their baseball program.
Eric, we're going through the rounds of the NFL and MLB draft right now. The first round was last night. We've got some more rounds today. I'm curious, what do you remember about your draft experience, and had you been drafted before coming out of high school?
I was not drafted out of high school, and I remember today was the day for me, the second day. So the night before, my best friend and roommate got taken by the Phillies in the second, so it was kind of a fun kind of couple days for our house. And then the following day, another roommate got taken by the A's. So yeah, it was a fun week.
Did you have a pretty good feel that you were going to be drafted that high? And when did you start to get the sense that you were even going to get drafted that year? Was it during the season?
I kind of heard talks after the performance I had in the Cape. I had some good outings there, and since right after the Cape, I heard talks from whatever 2 to 5 range for rounds. So then it all just depended on the college season, and then the scouts decided I fell in the fourth round range, which is good. I liked it.
South Bend Cup starting pitcher Eric Ullman joining us on SportsBeat. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on 96.1 WSBT. The Cubs and the Tin Caps play tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Were the Cubs a team that watched you quite often, or was it a surprise at all that they took you?
No, because the scout that that had me. He took a Cal Poly guy a couple years before, and I knew him because he's from Santa Barbara, which is right near San Luis Obispo. So he was actually around quite often, so he probably got the best look out of any of the scouts that came through there.
In terms of going through this process in the midst of a college baseball season, was all of the scouts coming around and maybe wanting to ask questions? Was it a distraction at all? Were you able to push that aside and stay focused on what you needed to do at Cal Poly?
Yeah, come game time, you're able to stay focused and do what you need to do. And then the scouts would have those player profile meetings, basically interviews.
Okay.
And they'd be easy, just set up during the week whenever I didn't have class, meet at a Starbucks or something for 30 minutes, and then they get to know your character.
Are you from Vegas?
Yeah.
Okay, so growing up in Vegas, I would think maybe you want to grow up to be a blackjack dealer or lounge singer, but did you grow up wanting to be a pro baseball player?
Yeah, I think it was always in the back of my mind. Especially when I went to college, I went as a civil engineering major, but Cal Poly is one of the like toughest schools for that, and then I kind of decided during my freshman year that if I want to stick with this baseball dream, I kind of got to switch majors, so I ended up switching to business for that.
So I'm trying to think. You're 22, right?
Yes, just okay. Turned 22.
So Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant are from Las Vegas. Did you ever cross paths with them on the diamond?
I did not. Okay. The closest I ever crossed paths with those pro guys is Gallo. I think I might have played like a summer game against him when I might have been in the eighth grade and he was going into his senior year or something. I think that's where we crossed.
Okay. I was just looking. Harper's 25. It doesn't seem like he's that old, but he got an early start in Major League Baseball. So I need your analysis on what it's going to take for the Vegas Golden Knights to rally from down 3-1 against the Washington Capitals in the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, so I think they just need to protect the middle of the ice better because those guys...
Wow.
They're flying.
Yeah. Washington looks really good, but I think the Knights got some momentum there in that last period until all that crap happened with the fighting and stuff. They couldn't play a clean game because they're just pissed off at each other. But so hopefully they get some momentum back at home. They do well on their home ice, and then if they take that momentum into Washington for a game 6, I think they got a chance there. And then I want the series to go 7, obviously, because then...
Right.
Vegas has a chance to win it, and it just makes it more exciting.
Were you much of a hockey fan before the expansion Knights came about?
Oh, not really.
You're really into this now?
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Keeping tabs on them.
Okay, speaking of Vegas, did you guys play Bishop Gorman in sports when you were in high school?
Yeah, we did.
So do you know, like, Alize Mack and Nico Fertitta, Ronnie Stanley, any of those guys?
Fertitta is a familiar name, but other than that, no, not really.
Okay. Well, his dad is used to own the UFC.
Well, yeah, I know his dad.
Lorenzo.
He's got a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And isn't Fertitta at Notre Dame here?
Yeah, correct. Fertitta is. Alize was Alize Jones when he was in high school instead of Alize Mack. He's here at Notre Dame. Ronnie Stanley plays for the Ravens. He was at Notre Dame. They've had quite a few Bishop Gorman kids.
Okay.
Pretty good run right now. Eric, let me talk about, I guess now we can say, one of your former teammates, Corey Abbott, was promoted to Myrtle Beach today. What did you like about his style of pitching? And I don't know if you guys pick up on stuff from each other, but what would you say made Corey able to have success at this level?
Yeah, he just knew what worked with his fastball and his off-speed. He really challenged hitters. He used his fastball up in the zone, and he's just got such a live fastball that hitters couldn't catch up to it, so he used that at this level, and guys didn't make adjustments, so that's why he had his success, and that's why he's moved up to Myrtle Beach.
That cutter was pretty good, too, it seemed like.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of good movement on it.
What do you feel like you need to do to continue the movement upward?
Yeah, so, like I've said, with working with the pitching department, I feel like the fastball, changeup, sinker is there, and we worked with the pitching department on the slider, and that started to come along. So I think once all those pitches are there, that's kind of when I'll be able to go up and start using those pitches and
improving them.
Putting Brian Lawrence, the pitching coach, out of the equation, how often after starts do you hear from people in the higher-ups in the organization, maybe the pitching coordinators? Is that quite often?
No, it's you usually just talk to B-Law after.
Okay.
And when you hear from them, it's when they come and visit.
Very good. Eric Ullman, let's see. You are going to start, I guess, at West Michigan, right?
Yeah, on Friday.
So on Friday, we'll have Eric on the mound right here on WSBT Radio. Well, we thank you for visiting.
Yeah,
we'll wish
you guys
the Golden Knights continued success. And, hey, we can't have enough hockey fans. I've been trying to get Eric into hockey for 7-8 years, and it hasn't worked yet.
I know how to celebrate in hockey. You throw your gloves and sticks if it's a big game.
Yeah.
That's what I'm working with, Eric. You can see that right there. But greatly appreciate your time, and best of luck the rest of the season with the South Bend Cubs. And I guess I should ask you, what's it been like since the crowds have been getting bigger to pitch in this type of environment at Four Winds Field?
Yeah, it's exciting. I like when the crowd has our back, and it's exciting when we're winning and they're all cheering loud.
It's a great place to play baseball, that's for sure. Appreciate your time this evening.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right. Eric Ullman, starting pitcher for the South Bend Cubs, joining us here on WSBT Radio. We'll step aside for a moment. More Sports Beat coming up on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Okay, here's the background of why I created today's My Five Question of the Day. There was a story online that talked about how the Alabama football program has an open-door policy for NFL teams to watch pretty much anything they want with Crimson Tide practices. It's huge for recruiting for Alabama, and they feel like they're getting players in front of NFL personnel more, which helps the players, which makes Alabama look better in the eyes of a lot of high school recruits. So I came up with this question. What are the top five things Notre Dame has or does to help kids get ready for the National Football League? We'll start with answer number five.
Yeah, in addition to letting scouts come to their practice, number five, I'm going to go with performing the combine drills. Notre Dame will at least once a year test all their players in terms of what happens at the combine, like the 40-yard dash, the vertical leap, the standing broad jump, things of that nature, the bench presses, how many reps you can do at 225. And that way, it kind of gives you a measuring stick. Also, when you watch the actual pro day, you see all these underclassmen sitting there watching their teammates. They're supporting, but they're also learning how to do these well and audition well for NFL teams.
Number four.
We talked about this a little bit in the beginning of the hour, and that was the 4x40 program. You know, you have Mike Mayock coming in to talk to Mike Mayock from NFL Network coming in to talk to players about what to expect in the evaluation process, the transition to NFL, all the other things that come with the 4x40, though. I think the one thing that, for example, Mike McGlinchey, I think beyond being a really good offensive tackle, they feel like they're getting a really well-rounded person. And that matters. I mean, obviously, you got to be able to play football, but if they don't have to worry about what you're doing off the field when you're an NFL guy, that's going to push you up in the draft.
The top five things Notre Dame football has or does to help kids get to the NFL. Number three.
Well, I think Brian Kelly's developed some connections. He's got a friendship with Bill Belichick, and he's gotten a lot more invested in NFL people. And at the beginning of his time, he wasn't. He wanted to differentiate himself from Charlie, so I think he really closed a lot of those doors. Eventually, kind of found a happy medium. You know, he felt like Charlie was maybe too into the NFL process. Brian was probably too removed from it. Now he's kind of found the middle ground.
Number two.
Well, I think Matt Bayless and training table are two huge issues. I can remember, for example, Tom Zbikowski being maybe 15 pounds underweight at the end of the season because, one, he didn't have training table. Two, they didn't have the kind of training they have with Matt Bayless. I think when you look at a guy like, again, Mike McGlinchey, his strength gains. Mike McGlinchey was a great athlete and a guy that was technically sound. But I think Matt Bayless gave him that strength piece that pushed him from maybe a second or third round draft choice into a first round draft choice.
The five things Notre Dame has or does to help kids get to the NFL. Number five, perform combine drills. Number four, the 4x40 program. Number three, Brian Kelly's connections to the NFL. Number two, Matt Bayless' training table. And number one,
I would say the competition level, the exposure, and the pressure of Notre Dame. You know that when you select a guy from Notre Dame, he's played against the best competition in the country. He's played in high-leverage, high-pressure games. The NFL playing in front of 70,000 people in an NFL stadium isn't going to be a big tradition coming from 77,000 at Notre Dame, where they are pretty demanding fan base.
That is today's My 5 question of the day, an update on the Major League Baseball draft and two Notre Dame players drafted today. Details coming up in just a moment as SportsBeat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tyler James will have a recruiting notebook for Notre Dame football. We'll also have a transfer story. C.J. Sanders finally has picked a school. He's going to SMU from the Notre Dame football team. As Darren mentioned, two players drafted from Notre Dame baseball in the Major League Baseball draft today. And, of course, there's much, much more. At some point, we're going to have a story about the Rolfs Athletic Hall, which is the new basketball facility for men's and women's basketball at Notre Dame. But that tweet has been appearing, disappearing, and reappearing, but I think it's going to be ready later the year, not now, which I think the initial tweets kind of...
It's been reworded. Okay, very good. Eric mentioned a couple of Notre Dame players drafted today. Matt Vierling out of St. Louis was a 2015 30th round pick of his hometown St. Louis Cardinals, decided to come to Notre Dame in his junior campaign at 310 with a 402 on base percentage and a 505 slugging percentage, tied for the team lead with 10 home runs. Athletic center fielder with above average speed according to MLB Pipeline. He also pitched at times 90 to 93 with the fastball, high 80s cutter as a right-hander on the mound. Vierling goes to the Philadelphia Phillies, fifth round pick number 137. Also today from Notre Dame in the seventh round, pick number 206, it was Nick Podkol, a right-handed hitting third baseman. And MLB Pipeline says the Notre Dame second baseman at 312 with a 433 on-base percentage and a 525 slugging percentage, leading the Fighting Irish in all three slash line categories. He also added 8 home runs, 9 stolen bases, and 11 tries. Podkol doesn't wow you with his tools, but he's hit in the ACC. He has a good feel for the game, and he is a solid defender. So, once again, Vierling to the Phillies in round 5, Podkol to the Blue Jays in round 7. There are a couple of more Notre Dame players that could be drafted, and we'll see if that happens. And otherwise, only one high school Indiana player has been taken, and that's from Roncalli High School, Nick Schnell, pick number 32 overall by the Tampa Bay Rays. Eric, enjoyed it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Sounds great. We got Pocky Kelly tomorrow.
That's right, at 5:10. Well, Sean Stiers will join me in just a couple of moments. Stick around. More Sports Beat coming your way on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, 3 is good!
Andrews steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, 3 for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT. We are leading into South Bend Cubs baseball, 6:50 pregame, 7:05 first pitch. It is Fort Wayne and South Bend game one of a three-game series. We've got rapid fire coming up at the bottom of the hour.
And we'll continue to follow the progress of the Major League Baseball draft. Two Notre Dame players have been taken today. We just talked about that in our previous segment. Matt Vierling to the Phillies in round five. Nick Podkol to the Blue Jays in round number seven. And likely that'll be it for Notre Dame players in day two of the Major League Baseball draft. And the Chicago Cubs have taken quite a few position players already. And that was what we had heard was going to happen, as the Cubs have been pitcher heavy the last couple of years. And there's a good chance, I would say, that their first round pick is going to be with South Bend at some point this year. When you have a college bat, normally they like to get them at least to low A by the end of the first season after being drafted. And Nico Horner, a shortstop from Stanford, was taken by the Cubs with the 24th overall pick, a three-year starter at Stanford, played second base during his freshman year, and then the last two seasons at shortstop, had a very good run in the Cape Cod League. That's always very important in the draft process. So there is some wonderment if he's going to be able to stick at shortstop, but it is Nico Horner out of Stanford taken by the Cubs with the 24th overall pick last night. Then you have a couple of high school bats. The next two picks, those guys I would assume would not be here by the end of the year. Normally they go to Mason rookie ball or maybe Eugene for short season. And then the next pick is Paul Ricken out of San Diego, a starting pitcher. And normally you shut down college pitchers after they're drafted, so I would assume he's not going to be here. So maybe the next guy might be Jimmy Herron out of Duke, a center fielder, a third-round pick. I could see possibly he might make the jump, along with Andy Weber out of Virginia, second baseman in the fifth round. So there are some possibilities of the South Bend Cubs having eventually a couple of 2018 draft picks on their roster, and it's an offense that has been a little up and down throughout the year. So we might have a little different-looking South Bend Cub roster in the very near future. And a prime example, Ian Happ was number 9 overall back in 2015 and ended up playing 38 games with South Bend before moving up to Myrtle Beach and eventually making it to the majors last year. So that's just my watching and listening of what's happened the last few years and trying to give you an idea what might happen with this South Bend Cub team. But they took a college bat with the first pick, so I would be shocked if he is not here. He's got to be here at some point, you would think, in the second half of the season. Well, I see it's reunion day at Wrigley Field today. Have you noticed that on Twitter?
That's right. It is. Old Jake Arrieta back on the north side today with the Phillies.
Look like he and manager Joe Maddon were having a very philosophical conversation earlier today, as there were some pictures on Twitter of that conversation. And the rumor was that Arrieta was offered the same deal Darvish got from the Cubs. I don't know if that was ever confirmed, but to this day, I still don't understand why Arrieta didn't take it, unless there were some hard feelings over negotiations, the way they turned out. I don't know, but he took less to be with the Phillies, and he has pitched very well for Philadelphia. But that's always going to be a big mystery to me, is why Arrieta just didn't stay put in Chicago. Maybe he just didn't like the way negotiations went and decided to go a different direction. But, boy, the Cub season looks a lot different if he takes it and Darvish is somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, even though Arrieta was not his best and certainly wasn't what he was 2 years prior to last season, but at the same time, he's looked a heck of a lot better than Yu Darvish this year, and that's a whole different conversation, a whole different complexion if Jake Arrieta's still around. I think the simple answer to your question why he didn't take it is Scott Boras was involved.
Maybe.
That's the best one I can come up with, because I think he still thought he was going to get that huge longer-term deal. And, more power to him, I guess, but the gamble didn't work out for him, at least in the short term.
All right, so Arrieta and the Phillies at Wrigley Field open up a series against the Cubs later tonight. We've created a segment called They Said It. These are audio sound bites from the last couple of days, and then we're just going to react to some of these quotes. And the first one actually centers around Philadelphia Phillies pitcher Jake Arrieta.
Boy, he was not happy over the weekend after a loss to the Giants. The Phillies' offense has been scuffling. He actually hit a home run in his start against the Giants, the only run the Phillies would score against right. San Francisco that day.
The whole series.
So, yeah, exactly right, if you want to expand that far. So he was a little frustrated with the team's play, and he also sounded off about not being a big fan of the defensive shifting that the Phillies do. So let's go ahead and play the soundbite of Jake Arrieta, the former Cub, now with the Phillies, not overly pleased with his team's performance out in San Francisco.
We need some accountability all the way around, everybody, top to bottom. Scored one run. Yeah, that's not good. This is a key moment in our season. You know, we had a pretty good April, pretty good May. June isn't starting out so well. Well, we're the worst in the league with shifts, so we need to change that. Copy the best. I don't know. That's not my job. Use your eyes, make an adjustment, and be better.
So Jake, obviously a little grumpy with what happened in that series, and probably not happy. A couple of balls that might have been outs, but due to a shift, ended up being base hits that hurt his performance against San Francisco. So were Arrieta's comments too critical of his team?
Well, I mean, first, I don't know what Arrieta thought he was getting into when he signed with Philadelphia. It's not like they've been a model organization over the last several years. Now they do have a new manager in Gabe Kapler, and he's supposed to be analytically inclined, but it sounds like they don't use some of that defensively as much as Arrieta would like. And obviously, as a pitcher, I think, you know, you'd really like your club to be doing that stuff to help you out. But, I mean, it was interesting because I saw a quote from Gabe Kapler today, and he basically said he's not upset. He said, quote, "If we're content, it means we're not getting better. Our clubhouse should be passionate, driven like Jake, and only satisfied when we're clicking on all cylinders," end quote. And there's more to it as well, kind of goes on. But, I mean, Arrieta didn't single out necessarily. He didn't single out teammates and that kind of stuff. I think that's where the line gets crossed. But I think he's frustrated. They've lost three in a row, four of their last five, six of their last eight games. So, I mean, they had come on. They were doing pretty well, and they're in a little bit of a slump right now. So it sounds like he's frustrated, and he'd like a little bit more, probably just wants more offensive support than anything. Because as you said, I mean, that solo home run that he got was the only one they got in that 6-1 loss the other day, and the only one they got all weekend. And even before that, they hadn't been scoring much. So I don't think he was necessarily overly critical of his team, especially because he didn't single out anyone specifically.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I was okay with his comments. Frustration sometimes boil over, and even though I'm a little bit of a Brian Kenny guy with the analytics of baseball, sometimes you got to take the emotions out of it. How much is a leader worth in the analytics world? A leader or a clubhouse leader isn't worth anything because you can't statistically show what its value is.
Right.
But there is no doubt they wanted to bring in a veteran pitcher to enhance their rotation. They felt like they had a guy at the top that can win a lot of games in Aaron Nola out of LSU. Arrieta comes in, he'll eat up innings, top of the rotation guy, even though some of the numbers a little off last year in terms of velocity, but still a high-end pitcher. So the Phillies wanted him for all those reasons, but Let's face it, he's also a guy that can help out a young pitching staff and a young clubhouse, and I think that was him just, without calling anyone out specifically, just tried to get the attention of the baseball team by making those public comments. You just don't say something to the media without having a little game plan. Now, there are some guys that just say things just to say things, but I right. think a guy like Arrieta, he knew what he was doing. He was trying to get the attention of some of the younger players, so had he called out specific players, my answer would have been different, but since he was pretty generic, I was okay with his comments.
Yep.
And the shifting conversation, I think, is going to be fascinating. Just because there is many people in the game that want to get rid of the shifts. Like in football, you have to have so many people on each side of the ball on a kickoff. Well, in baseball, a lot of people feel like you need to have two infielders to the left of second base and two to the right. We need to stop the shifting. You know, some people say, well, the players over the last 6-7 years have not adjusted offensively to shifts. They need to learn how to bunt. They need to learn to hit the ball the other way. But here's the only thing I will say to that. Bunting is one thing, but asking players to hit the ball against the shift sounds easy. But let me give you an example. A left-handed batter is up, and you put three infielders on the right side of the diamond.
Okay.
So the third baseman is all by himself on the left side. Sean, if the pitcher is throwing off-speed pitches inside, how difficult is it to go inside out and hit the ball to the left side?
Yeah.
It seems easy, but when you've got 98 as a possibility and you have to adjust to the breaking ball, the off-speed pitches, they're trying to get you to roll over and ground the ball to the right side where your defense is. So to ask someone to hit the ball to the left side automatically when they're pitching you inside can be very difficult at times. And again, this isn't Little League. This is the majors where the stuff is right at its best, and it's sometimes very difficult not to hit the ball into the shift because the way you are being attacked by the pitcher and the catcher.
Yeah, I mean, they're not just going to shift to one side and then pitch you completely differently than the way they have their shift set up. That is a big part of it, and you're right. I mean, it's major league pitching we're talking about, and it's something if guys are going to do it, it's something that they have to be working on, not just for a couple months or a couple weeks. It's something that takes time to be able to do that. So it's just a swing. It's a long-term swing adjustment. And you know, I think a big part of it too is the contact versus swinging for home runs and all that. And there was some of that. Rob Manfred was on during the draft and some of this different stuff came up. I'm going to be interested to see. I think that it is. He made a comment, and I wish I would have written it down at the time, that kind of sounded like maybe this shifting and stuff could get addressed in the off season. It'll be interesting to see if they do decide to do anything to it, because it does play a big part in how the game is being played right now and the lack of action that's going on in Major League Baseball right now.
They said it, cut number two. Back in 2014, Mike Fiers, then a pitcher for the Astros, hit Marlins outfielder Giancarlo Stanton with a fastball in the left cheek, causing serious injuries to Stanton. Last night, they met again. Fiers, a starting pitcher for the Tigers, Stanton with the Yankees, and Fiers unintentionally hit Stanton in the left elbow guard, causing Stanton to get very upset as he was walking down to first base, and he hollered a few things at the Tigers starting pitcher. Later in the game, Stanton got some revenge with a home run. So they both had comments after the game. We're going to play those for you. First, you're going to hear Stanton, and then you're going to hear Fiers.
If it's going to come up and in like that, then yeah, it does. Wasn't trying to hit me in that situation, but still, with the history like it, what happened, you know, don't hit me. It was nice. Win would be better, but say what you need to say and, you know, get to the next guy. Hopefully we can get some runs going and, you know, not stir anything up. It's not trying to help us win at the end of the day.
I don't know. I understand that he's pissed, but it's the way he handled it, I think it was kind of childish. I mean, you know, anybody knows, you know, watching this game that, you know, I'm not throwing at him. So, you know, he's going to act how he's going to act, and, you know, but it kind of shows kind of his character, because obviously I wasn't throwing at him. Pitch was in, and, you know, if I could throw a pitch anywhere I wanted every time, I'd probably be one of the best pitchers in this game. So, you know, I got to throw in. I got to throw up. I got to throw it everywhere and keep these guys, you know, from, you know, making good contact with it. And so be it. You know, like I said, I'm not trying to hit anybody, but, you know, I definitely got to throw in. And, you know, those things happen every once in a while.
All right, Sean, whose comments are the most fair?
You know what? I understand Stanton doesn't want to get hit, especially after getting his cheek smashed a few years ago by this same guy. Nobody wants that. But he does wear one of those hard face protectors now on his helmets, one of those big lips or whatever. And I think what you said, he didn't just get hit in the arm. I mean, he got hit in his body armor. You know, and he has one of the most closed stances that you'll see in baseball right now, the hard shell protection. That's what that pitch hit. And I mean, if you look at Fire's history, he hit 13 batters last year, 28 wild pitches over the last two seasons. So he struggled with some control. And I mean, he's trying to pitch inside. So I side with the pitcher on this one. Even though the childish part at the front, that's the only thing I'm not sure about, because obviously Stanton felt like he got some sort of revenge after getting hit by pitch. Childish, I don't know. But at the same time, I felt like the whole thing with Stanton, just the way he reacted when he got hit by pitch the first time was a little bit overboard. Again, considering he's body armored up out there.
Had it been up and in, I would have been very upset. Elbow guard, nah. I understand the history, but the fact he got hit in the elbow guard, I just think he overreacted.
Exactly.
As a batter, and I know there's history. It's human nature to be extra upset because that's the guy that injured you very badly back in 2014. And like you, for Fires to call him childish and sign of his character, I think that's very unreasonable. Two wrongs don't make a right. So I don't know if either side yeah. is very fair
Good point.
In their comments in this particular situation. Mike just needs to apologize, do the right thing, just say, hey, I didn't mean to do it, I'm sorry. Say that to the media, but then calling out Stanton just doesn't do anybody any good in this entire situation. And Stanton pointed out to the mound after he crossed home plate. He pointed out at Fires to kind of say, ha ha, I mean, come on. Just keep your head down and run. But again, if it's up and in, hey, I take issue with that. But elbow guard, you got to pitch inside to Stanton. You can't let him get his arms extended.
Yeah.
You got to pitch inside. And sometimes, you know what? You're going to clip Stanton. That's just reality. And hey, Fires is not Max Scherzer. And he's not Clayton Kershaw. He's not Justin Verlander. So he is not going to hit his targets. He is kind of right about that. But the fact you got to pitch Stanton inside, he's going to get hit once in a while. Ask Anthony Rizzo about that. He understands that's part of standing close to home plate. Now, Stanton has a closed stance, but he's got to understand teams have to pitch him inside. If he gets his arms extended, he can hit the ball out of any part of the ballpark.
Well, and you saw, obviously, Fires hit him with a fastball, and you saw what the pitch that Stanton hit for the home run was a hanging breaking ball. So, yeah. I mean, you see what happens when you hang him a breaking ball. I'd be trying to pitch him inside with fastballs, too.
They said it, cut number three. Tomorrow, game three of the NBA Finals in Cleveland. Golden State up 2-0. Cavaliers' LeBron James had this to say about the odds being against him and the Cavaliers in this series.
The odds have been against me since, I don't know, since I was 5-6 years old, you know. So, you know, we're talking about basketball here, you know. It seems like I come up here and tell you guys this all the time. The odds has been stacked up against me since I was, you know, an adolescent. So, you know, I put our team in position to try to win a championship, to compete for a championship. And, you know, it's my job to make sure that we're as focused, as laser focused as possible, do my job, and continue to instill confidence into my teammates, into the last horn sound.
Your thoughts on LeBron's comments?
Well, the most odd thing that I heard him say there is about instilling confidence in his teammates until the last horn sounds. Because, I mean, they've been talking about that video since game one now that shows him sitting next to J.R. Smith on the bench right after Smith's blunder there, pulling the ball out on that offensive rebound, and LeBron gives him the silent treatment. And, I mean, I'm not blaming LeBron for the loss because he didn't try to pump up J.R. Smith in that situation like a lot of people have done since seeing that video. But I do think it's odd that LeBron is saying, oh, I'm always out there instilling confidence, when you have pretty recent proof that he doesn't sit out there and necessarily pump his guys up when they're out there.
Well, I think it's odd. He talks about how the odds are always against him. Now, I don't know about growing up as a child in Akron, but in high school, dominant player. Best team on the floor.
Yeah.
Or best player on the floor at all times. NBA, pretty much always the best player on the floor. He's gotten to choose wherever he's wanted to go after being drafted by Cleveland.
True.
He had the decision and went to Miami. Then he decided to go back to Cleveland. So he has been in control of all that. I have the feeling he's in control of a lot of transactions that happen in Cleveland. So, okay, maybe as a child there are the odds are against him. But ever since he got into high school, it's awfully hard to argue that LeBron has had everything up against him and the odds against him in terms of being a basketball player.
I think so many of these guys, it seems like they try to keep that grudge, that chip on their shoulder, like everyone's against me and all that kind of stuff. I guess if that's what motivates him, he's obviously done pretty well with it. But I would agree. You're right when you think about how his career is gone. I think it's been a while since the odds have really been against specifically LeBron. Maybe against the Cavaliers because of the way the team's composed, but he has a lot to do with that as well.
Let's go to, they said it, cut number four. Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, 34 years old, becomes a free agent after the 19 season. This was Rodgers' comments on if he wants to end his career in Green Bay.
It'd be fun to have that connection still to the state and the team and the region. I've said it before, every player would love to be able to pick when and how they finish up. That usually doesn't happen, though. So I'm going to try and play as well as I can for a number of years, and hopefully it's here the entire time.
All right, Sean, so what are the odds Rodgers ends his career in Cheesehead Land?
If you asked me the same question about Brett Favre when he was the same age, 34 yeah. years old, I mean, I would have said there's no way that he plays for anyone but Green Bay, but it didn't quite work out that way. You know, obviously Mr. Rodgers came along and things changed after that. What I think is the most interesting part of this whole thing is I saw also where Rodgers apparently wants to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, and he wants an opt-out clause so that he can leave Green Bay if another quarterback signs a bigger deal than him. So there's some conflict in his stance on that and saying that he wants to finish things up in Green Bay because, I mean, all it takes is one guy signing a bigger contract. And, I mean, right now, Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins have bigger contracts than him. So, I mean, I don't think it would take long for the next guy to come along and sign an even bigger deal. So if he's got that mindset, then I don't think there's any way that he's going to finish his career at Cheesehead.
This is a tough one because automatically any Packer fan will tell you, of course he's going to finish his career in Green Bay. You got to pay when you have the franchise quarterback. It's worth having that guy. You know, you want the franchise guy, but if he is going to eat so much of your salary cap, it's going to hurt you in other parts of the football team.
Right.
I mean, there's an argument. Case Keenum with the Vikings had a big year. Denver signs him for probably under the cost of a starting pitcher or a starting quarterback in the National Football League. Definitely not elite money. Is it better to take a Keenum or a Nick Foles and try to win with that quarterback? Then you can move money elsewhere to improve your football team. I think it's a really interesting question. I think 10 years ago, you keep that elite quarterback as long as you can until they retire. But I think now with the restrictions of the salary cap, sometimes you got to do a little maneuvering. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to say Rodgers ends up staying in Green Bay during the best part of his career. Now, if he gets to 38, 39 and he starts to go downhill, then I think we have a different conversation. But I think the Packers will lock him up for maybe 4 or 5 more years and ride out what they hope is a couple of more good years for Aaron Rodgers. And if he can play at a Tom Brady level for a few more years, then I guess it would make the contract worth it. But
yeah.
Can they do a good enough job drafting and in free agency in order to fill out the rest of the roster, giving up so much to their starting quarterback? That's the key.
Yep. A lot to it. A lot to it if they're going to pay him that kind of money.
All right. We'll do one more really fast. They set at number 5, 82 NFC Championship game, Dallas at San Francisco. The Niners down 27-21 with a minute to go. When this happened, Vin Scully had the call on the radio that day.
see a pick of some kind on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking, throwing in the end zone. It's a madhouse at Candlestick with 51 seconds left. Dwight Clark is 6'4". He stands about 10 feet tall in this crowd's estimation.
And, of course, Dwight Clark passed away earlier this week at the age of 61 after a battle with ALS. My apologies to Cowboy fans, but the question is, the play is known as the catch.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, is that the most famous catch in NFL history?
It's certainly iconic in Northern California, the Bay Area. I mean, you go around. I lived out there for a year a long time ago, and, I mean, there are pictures of that stupid catch everywhere, but you know, there have been a lot of big ones over the years. You think about NFL history, Franco Harris, the Immaculate Reception, Staubach to Drew Pearson, the Hail Mary against the Vikings, David Tyree's catch even against the or for the Giants against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. It's a tough one because of I think if you look at the miraculousness of in everything, I think that's right up there. The Immaculate Reception, though, is I think I've got to put that one at the top.
I'm going to agree with you. I think the Franco Harris catch is number one, but I think Clark is number two.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's actually been more important touchdown score, the John Taylor touchdown catch in Super Bowl 23.
The Bengals,
against
right?
The Bengals, yeah. With seconds left. That really gets lost in the shuffle.
Yep.
The Joe Montana in the huddle say, hey, there's John Candy over there, just to kind of relax
right.
That huddle. But that actually won a Super Bowl with seconds left, but that really is a touchdown that doesn't get much hoopla because it was just a slant, perfectly thrown football touchdown. But I'm with you. Immaculate Reception one. The catch is number two. We'll do rapid fire coming up next on WSBT. It is already 21 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean has rapid fire.
All right, Darren, there are 88 days to go until the start of the Notre Dame football season and 172 days from now until the end of the football season when the Irish play at USC November 24th. So, here's my question for you. If you could invest in one Fighting Irish player over the next 172 days like a stock, who would it be?
Why don't you give your answer? Give me a second to think about that. That's
okay.
A tough one.
All right. Yeah, you know, the old stock adage, and I got this from a tweet that I saw Buster Olney do with baseball the other day, and maybe we'll do a baseball one later this week as well. But, you know, the old adage, buy low, sell high, that kind of thing. So really the question is, what player that's maybe a little below the radar has the most upside, and thought about a few different players on each side of the ball, but I am going to go with Jordan Genmark Heath because, like Drew Tranquil, here's a guy came in as a safety, like Tranquil. He saw time at Buck linebacker this spring, and we really don't know a whole lot about Jordan Genmark Heath other than what we saw from him this spring, but he looked pretty good in the limited time that he was playing some linebacker. He looked pretty good, and we know that going into the season, Tranquil's going to be the buck, Tavon Coney's going to be the middle linebacker, but they're going to need more than just those two guys to make it through the season because we saw last year, Niles Morgan, Greer Martini, Coney, there are a lot of reps to go around at those two spots, and those three guys and Tranquil ended up being the top four tacklers on the team last year, obviously when Tranquil was Rover. So the rotation's not going to be necessarily the same like it was with three guys for those two spots last year, but at the same time, I think that there are going to be some opportunities, and Genmark Heath seemed to adapt pretty quickly to playing linebacker. So I would buy. That would be my stock. Buy low, sell high right now between now and the end of the season.
That's a great question, first off. I like that idea. You know, what came to mind for me is I need somebody that's maybe number three on the depth chart that could sneak into more playing time.
Okay.
So with that in mind, I went with Avery Davis. quarterback slash running back, and with Dexter Williams possibly missing some time
right
to start the year, it's Tony Jones Jr. running back and dot, dot, dot. Well,
exactly.
Avery Davis is making the transition from quarterback to running back. He was intriguing in the spring. You feel like there's going to be some packages for him during the year, but maybe that role is expanded if Dexter misses some time. So I'm going to go with Avery Davis as my guy I'm going to buy stock in right now.
I think that's a good one as well, and I kind of considered Davis, Jafar Armstrong, but not really knowing exactly what the roles are going to be going in. But
right.
He was another one that I think was in that equation as well. And, I mean, you could probably even look at, like, some of the offensive linemen since there are some new names in there. Liam Eichenberg, and then, you know, Hainsey and Kramer both right. in there. But there are going to be some guys in some different spots, and Eichenberg kind of the most notable as the new guy out there. So, interesting. Okay, so yours is Avery Davis. Mine is Jordan mm-hmm. Jenmarkeith. We ended up going opposite sides of the ball. All right.
Put that on your list of things that we need to remember what our answers
That's right.
were.
That's right. All right. I will write that down. Okay, we probably have time for one more question here. And we touched on this a little bit earlier, but fill in the blank on this one. The Cubs' first day of the draft last night was blank.
It was what the doctor ordered. I think there is right now a weakness in the middle infield in the Cubs system. So I think that is a positive. I think they get a shortstop. Maybe he's a second baseman down the road. Maybe he's a third baseman. I'm not sure. I don't have the evaluation of him. But once you have graduated Javi Baez, Addison Russell to the majors, you have settled on Ian Happ for the most part being an outfielder, although he's played third and first, but I don't think he's a middle infielder. I don't think he's a second baseman. And you've traded Gleyber Torres, so there is a bit of a hole right now, middle infielders in this Cubs organization in terms of highly thought of prospects. So to me, the Stanford shortstop is just what the Cubs minor league organization needed.
And he's a guy, and I would agree that, I mean, they definitely filled an organizational need right there. When you look at the draft as a whole, they went with him, and then you've got a couple of different guys from California, one from a high school, one from the University of San Diego, and a guy from Arizona. So you've definitely got kind of a Western flavor to at least last night anyway. Today they mixed it up a little bit more, guys from all over the place that they took today. But I agree, and I mean, when you look at Horner, some of the stuff that I read today, the biggest thing that jumped out in one of the evaluations, they said he's a slightly less fluid version of Ian Kinsler with the potential to be an offensive-minded second baseman at the highest level. So you touched on it there. Maybe
Makes
he's
sense.
Short, maybe he's second, and they did take another second baseman today. But like you said, they really need middle infielders, and so they went with one, a guy with some polish who's played in the Cape Cod League and is over the summer and played at a pretty high level in college. So it sounds like their guy at the top is pretty good, and then what they get with some of these other guys kind of, I mean, it's definitely to be seen down the line. But this Brennan Davis sounds like a pretty good athlete. I guess he was a really good high school basketball player, and he ended up giving it up to focus on baseball, and he's become a really high baseball prospect since giving up basketball.
Right. Well, I'm not picking. I'm just offering some numbers just as an example. South Bend's middle infielders tonight, one is hitting .266 with 17 errors, and the other is hitting .227 with 9 errors. So that's the middle infield starting lineup for South Bend tonight. And Aramis Ottoman is at Myrtle Beach. He's 19 years old.
Right.
You know, has not had great numbers in South Bend last year or Myrtle Beach this year. He's just been solid. He hasn't dominated a level yet. There's high hopes for him, but I think this was a good step in the right direction, enhancing the middle infielders in this organization.
The pitcher, Recon, is that how you say his last name from San Diego?
Not sure.
And that's he sounds like a mixed bag because, again, just kind of reading some of the stuff and looking at some of his numbers, 89 and two-thirds innings pitched this season. He gave up 99 hits, but he also had 101 strikeouts and just 13 walks with a 4.62 ERA.
Right.
So he strikes a lot of guys out, but they also put the ball in play quite a bit against him. So he's interesting.
And Sean, I misspoke earlier. I'm going to correct myself. When I was mentioning a couple of guys who might be in South Bend later this year from the draft, one guy I mentioned is going to need Tommy John surgery so we can knock him off the list. That's the kid out of Duke, Jimmy Heron, a third-round pick. So he's going to need Tommy John surgery. I mentioned him as a possibility. Obviously, that's not going to be the case. But right. The first-round pick is a definite possibility. I'm sure he gets some time in Eugene and then eventually will make his way to South Bend.
All right. And there's a couple of these guys, that Heron from Duke and the kid from Ethan Roberts from Tennessee Tech. They're both playing in Super Regionals next weekend with their current college teams. They pulled off some upsets this weekend.
Yeah. I believe Tennessee Tech took out Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Very surprising.
Yep.
All right. That is going to do it for Rapid Fire. I'm sorry my segment went too long. Your time. So
I enjoyed it.
I'll make it up to you tomorrow. You'll get plenty of time for Rapid Fire.
All right.
All right.
Good.
Sports Beat tonight is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card, just $99, and that card gets you up to 80% off rounds of golf, including cart, at Blackthorn Golf Club. And by Ivy Court Inn and Suites, with convenient and unique meeting spaces, you're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. On the guest list tomorrow, Pocky Kelly, the wife of Notre Dame football coach Brian Kelly, to talk about Kelly Cares Foundation and the Football 101 event coming up next Tuesday. And also we have Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn, tournament director for the Symetra Tour Four Winds Invitational. That's coming up this weekend at Blackthorn. He'll offer all the details on that. For Sean, I'm Darren. That does it for Sports Beat. Cubs baseball comes your way next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.